One week from today, Iraqi citizens will vote in the first post-Saddam Hussein elections. They will choose 275 members of a national assembly. There will also be elections to provincial assemblies, as well as to the autonomous Kurdish parliament in the north. The votes are expected to divide along religious and ethnic lines. Shias are a majority in Iraq, and Kurds are expected to back their own parties. Sunni representation, however, remains a concern. Some Sunni parties plan to boycott the elections, and many fear that the lack of Sunni representation could cast doubts on the legitimacy of the future government. Michael O'Hanlon is on the phone. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a frequent guest on the show. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Leanne.
Assume for a moment that there are no major security developments next Sunday, that a new National Assembly is elected. Will it be an effective legislative body, given that few Sunnis are likely to be elected?
Well, the big problem, Leanne, as you say, is that the Sunnis are going to be underrepresented even compared to their minority status in the population, and that's the big challenge. There's a chance that that could be at least partially compensated for if the Shia and Kurds are very magnanimous and generous in spirit and give the Sunnis a role that is sort of 15% to 20% of the total importance, which would be consistent with their share of the population, even though the Sunnis will probably only win something around 5% of the total number of seats in parliament. So part of it's going to depend on the reaction of the Shia and Kurds. They could, for example, in whatever committee is set up to start to draft the constitution, which is the big responsibility of this new parliament, they could give the Sunnis 15 or 20% of the seats, even if the number of seats in parliament for the Sunnis would be much less than that. So there are some things that could be done to compensate, but I really do worry that we're headed for a further disenfranchisement and angering of the Sunni Arab population, which, as we all know, is the core of the insurgency at this time.
Briefly outline some of the more important issues the National Assembly will have to deal with right away.
Well, the Constitution really is the key one, and, of course, that raises several other matters. Maybe the biggest single one is how to allocate oil revenue. Traditionally, this sort of an asset is viewed as a national asset, and revenue would usually come into a national government and be distributed in whatever fashion among provinces and programs. However, there is some recent tendency now in Iraq to give the revenue or large parts of it to whatever local government is sitting on top of the oil. The problem is that could really make the Sunnis even worse off because their land basically covers the part of Iraq with the least oil and also the least farmland. So they really are at risk of being shut off even further from their fair share of oil revenue in addition to their fair share of seats in parliament. Again, it's largely their own doing and their own individual people's doing that they've been wound up in this position, but it still could lead to a further angering of that important part of the population.
Now, what can the election mean for the United States? I mean, for example, is it a good time perhaps to start thinking about reducing the American military presence in Iraq?
Well, I think that the election itself is less the reason, but we have to take a broad view of the trends in Iraq, and they've been quite poor. I don't think there is any serious debate about this. Obviously, it was a tough task, and it is a tough task, and we can debate how much the Bush administration made mistakes versus how much it was just inherently difficult. But I think everyone has to realize we're really not doing as well as we had hoped, as we expected, and we're not clearly on a path to victory. So this raises the broad question, how do you handle a situation in which our military presence is needed in the short term to maintain stability, but it's also become part of the problem because it becomes a symbol of perceived occupation of this land by a foreign power, which then helps the insurgency recruit new members. I'm not saying we are an occupying power. We obviously are not. And American troops are performing remarkably bravely, but they are being seen by the Sunni Arabs in particular as oppressing them or as occupying the country, going after Iraq's oil, et cetera, et cetera. I think this raises the question of the need for a potential plan for a gradual withdrawal and making that plan public very soon in order to convince Iraqis that we're not there to stay and we're not there to occupy.
And yes or no, do you think there is a plan, post-election plan?
No, I don't think that there is a detailed plan except stay the course, which, you know, again, has a lot of aspects to it, and we've certainly spent 2 years developing a detailed plan. And so continuing that is, to some extent, a plan for the future, but I don't think it's going to be an adequate one.
Michael O'Hanlon is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Thanks a lot, Michael.
Thank you, Leanne.